If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson. Here on the magnificent Monday edition of the Yard, it's good to be back in Starkville after about a week over in Hoover, Alabama. Hung around for you extra day trying to get some information for you guys. Those of you guys that are Gene Spade subscribers, you're well aware of this. And had a chance to speak to Tim Corbin and Jay Johnson and Tony Vitello and Mark Kingston from South Carolina. And just to get some information, you know, and unfortunately, things didn't go the way we hoped. That doesn't change a whole lot other than the fact that we do not get to host a regional at Duty Noble Field. There's one thing I want to say before we get too deep in the weeds here. I have seen some people out there, and I don't know where this comes from, that have said, well, it's an easier path to Omaha if we don't host. And let me explain to you why that makes no sense. We were either going to be, you know, the 15 or 16 seed and host here at Duty Noble Field. We're still going to be in the 15, 16, 14, 13 type region. Some of that will be based on geography rather than actual merit. And so you're still going to be paired up with a top 8 national seed in the super regional round if you're fortunate enough to advance. So no, we gain nothing. Absolutely nothing. In fact, it makes it more difficult because now you're going to have to beat two number ones in their own ballpark. It's always better to host. There is no easier path to Omaha as a number two. If we end up as a number two in a top eight national seed bracket, then we'd have to beat them at their place. It's the same situation if you advance to a super. So no, you gain absolutely nothing by not hosting. And that line of thinking is just absolutely flawed. And so anybody that tells you, well, it may be easier to get to Omaha as a two seed on the road, they just don't know what they're talking about. I'm not trying to be difficult or make anybody feel bad. There's just no sense in that argument whatsoever. Now, that's not to say that we can't get to Omaha. We absolutely can. Matter of fact, had a lot of people around this conference tell me they're worried about being paired up with Mississippi State. You know, as I tweeted last night, I know one number one seed that's going to be awfully upset when they see Mississippi State in their bracket. In fact, I called us the Hounds of Hail. It kind of came to me. But yeah, I think you've got a very angry Mississippi State baseball team. I think you've got a very angry Mississippi State coaching staff. And so we need to use that energy in a very positive way and go win a regional. And I don't think anybody's going to be excited to see that. I spoke with Jay Johnson from LSU after a press conference, and we're going to talk a little bit about the SEC tournament. We'll do our top 10 list. We'll take a look at the bracket, and then we'll kind of break down the teams that that we're going to face or we could face in our trip. But I talked to Jay, and I was like, you know, Jay, hey, good luck with you guys the rest of the way. You had a great week. But also, I don't think anybody's going to be excited to see LSU as their number two, especially as well as the Tigers are playing. It's like you're all excited today because, hey, we got a host. We're going to be hosted at our place. Everybody get excited. Somebody call the paper. And then all of a sudden it pops up and LSU's headed to town. With all those LSU fans that are now rejuvenated because of their recent play. Down the stretch, they've played as well as as well as Tennessee. Actually better than Kentucky. It's true. And so I said, Jay, I said, you know, good luck to you guys, and there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be picking you guys to win, and whoever gets you guys as a number two is going to have a tough weekend. And Jay made a funny comment. He goes, you know, Steve, I've been in those rooms. You know, it's like you're all excited, and then you get a draw that kind of dampens the enthusiasm. It's like you want to be up for your kids. And I thought he said something, too, that was great during the press conference when he mentioned that, you know, he picked Mississippi State as his Omaha sleeper back in the preseason. And he says, you know, Steve, the one of these things is not like the other. After being in the SEC for 3 years, it's just different. The fans are different. The venues are different. The pressure is different. Tim Corbin kind of said the same thing. We expect a lot of our teams to get to Omaha. You're going to have to deal with the SEC if you want to win the NFL championship. It's as true as that. And, of course, Coach Vitello, a lot of you guys only know him from his behavior between the lines, but he is a very engaging guy, and we have a lot of mutual friends, and we discussed that as well, kind of made some connections out there. But, yeah, Tony's another guy that believes Mississippi State is a very dangerous team. And as he told me in the hallway after the post-game press conference, you know, he made a comment. He said, you know, hey, anybody that watched that game between us and Mississippi State and doesn't think they're one of the top 16 teams in the country is kidding themselves. But the committee didn't think so. And I'm going to share my thoughts on that a little bit later. But the time for kind of whining about that stuff is over. You know, I was disappointed yesterday, too. I wasn't surprised. I was disappointed. I did my best over at jeanspage.com to try to prepare people for the possibility. Mid-afternoon, things really kind of began to take a turn. You know, early in the day, there was some cautious optimism. And then it's like, you know what, I don't know if it's going to work out. It's basically a coin flip. And, you know, here we are. So we're on the road. We need to embrace that. If we are coming to your neck of the woods, we encourage you to go ahead and buy tickets. As soon as I get done with this show, we get done with Coach Simonis, I got to make my own arrangements. And, of course, we'll be covering regional baseball. As long as the Bulldogs are on the road, so will I be. It's true. That's how life works. And, of course, we're back in the studio today, but we'll record the show this weekend from our regional hosting destination. So Wednesday, I'll set all that up for you. And then we'll hit the road Thursday. It doesn't matter where it is. It doesn't matter if it's Corvallis. Doesn't matter if it's UC Santa Barbara. It makes no difference whatsoever. We're going to be there. And so that's just kind of how I live my life, right? I believe in authenticity, and I believe in being there. We cover Mississippi State, even when the team leaves town. You know, I've been to just about every Mississippi State baseball game. I missed six this year. I didn't get to go to A&M because I had an appearance. That was a scheduling conflict. And then we didn't go to Ole Miss for obvious reasons. But I covered every other game, midweek game, weekend game, home, away, win, loss, whatever, because I believe you guys deserve it. And you deserve to have somebody there to talk to your coaches and your players to get their reaction from ball games, no matter where they are. That's important to me, and I think it's important to you. And we fashion ourselves as a Blue Blood baseball program. We do. And so we're going to give Blue Blood coverage to Mississippi State baseball at jeanspage.com and certainly on this show. Hey, let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company, longtime sponsors of this show. I love Bulldog Burger Company, and I've got to go chow down in there before I hit the road again. I've got a hankering for Bulldog Burger Company, and that's a regular occurrence in my life just because of the fact I know what good food tastes like, and I know to go where I'm going to be treated well. Right? I want good value for my dollar. I work hard for every dime that I make, and you do too, right? You do too, and you deserve to have great service, great food, at a great price. You're going to find that at Bulldog Burger Company. Three great locations to serve you: University Drive in Stark Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Have the spring rolls as your appetizer. They'll make you and everybody around you better looking. It's even on the menu, thanks and courtesy of your good friend and host. But get that great restaurant quality burger. Again, if you're a newbie to Bulldog Burger Company, then shame on you. But hey, we're glad that you finally given them a chance. Have the Bulldog Burger to start. Start there. And then after you've had that, maybe in your next visit, maybe branch out a little bit on the wild side. You could have the Mission. I like the Pico de Gallo on the side. I'm not an onions guy, as you guys know. I'll be sick all day if I had an uncooked onion. Maybe get the Smokehouse, right? It doesn't matter what you want. They've got something for you, whether it be those sweet heat chicken sliders, the sloppy Joe sliders. There's just so many great options to choose from. If you want to eat a little fresh, you know, hey, maybe get that BLT salad. I like it grilled. You may like it fried. I don't know your needs. I'm from South Mississippi. It's kind of sacrilege to eat grilled chicken, but I love it. I do. I love the grilled chicken BLT salad there at Bulldog Burger Company. And get dessert to go. I'm a big advocate for that. Whether it be a chocolate shake to go or perhaps the bread pudding, because a little bit later in the evening, you're gonna want that palate cleanser. And rather than just go grab something out of the pantry, you've got that great restaurant quality dessert. Maybe that Shipley's bread pudding, right? Just put that away. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. All right, before we get into our bracket, let's take kind of a look at the week that was over in Hoover. You know, the whole thing started game one, Georgia and LSU. And we wondered, okay, with Georgia going out first, the first team eliminated from the tournament, because, you know, it's single elimination on day one, you know, how would that impact their seeding? Turns out that it didn't. Their RPI still remains constant. And, you know, that, the problem that you encounter if you're Georgia is that you lose the opportunity to continue to build, but you also lose the ability to kind of erode your own resume. Like if they'd won and then maybe gone 1-2, it's a different scenario, right? The good thing is there weren't any low RPI teams in the bracket, so there's nobody that could just kind of tank your resume, even though there were some other teams that ended up hosting that that's precisely what happened to them. But LSU wins that first game 9-1, and then Alabama and South Carolina, a surprise for me, I'll be honest with you. South Carolina, to me, was a surprise team of Hoover. They were really good, too. They had some defensive lapses late, and we'll get to that game shortly, but South Carolina proved to me that they're a better team than maybe their record indicated. They take down Alabama 10-5. And, of course, Alabama kind of paying the price for that. Number one, you were one of five 13-17 teams, and you're one of the first teams out. So no chance to kind of build upon that. Bottom half of the bracket, which is our bracket, of course, Vanderbilt beats Florida 6-3. Florida kind of in the same boat as Alabama. You know, you show up there in a five-way tie, 13-17, and you did nothing to help yourself. And again, you know, Florida had a great non-conference schedule. One of the things about them, too, I think is interesting, too, is that there was an intent to schedule well. And it reflects that in their strength of schedule and in their non-con strength of schedule. But you know, a good example is Miami. Like, people expected Miami to be a top 25 team. And, of course, they made it to the ACC semifinals. Ultimately losing to Duke. We could have used a little help there. But, you know, Florida went out and scheduled Miami, and a lot of other people went out and, you know, scheduled Miami of Ohio. You know, so give the Gators some credit for trying to do things the right way. They've got a ton of talent. You know, it's just one of those things you look at and say, how did they get to this point? Of course, Mississippi State takes care of Ole Miss 2-1, the memorable Connor Hyzak home run. It seems like forever ago and just a few days ago at the same time. We really thought we were in bad shape. We thought we were going to lose that ballgame 1-0, but we didn't. And it ends Ole Miss's season, which is kind of poetic in and of itself. And, of course, big news later in the week as Mike Bianco retained for another year, much to the chagrin of many Ole Miss fans. And I'll be honest with you, I probably would have done the same thing, truthfully, even though I don't think that the Lamonis and Bianco things are exactly the same. And the reason that I say that is there were a lot of people that wanted to fire Mike Bianco prior to them making the NCAA tournament back in 22 and then going on a historic one and winning the national championship. There were people that wanted him gone. And I understand they were already talking to coaches kind of indirectly. And so heading into 2021, nobody wanted Lamonis fired. Of course, Bianco wins a national championship, saves his job. But let's be honest about this too. And I think any compliment from a Mississippi State perspective in Ole Miss's direction is probably one that should be well received. But Mike Bianco took Ole Miss from basically an SEC also ran and made them a contender. And I don't think all that can be washed away in just a couple seasons. Now, next year, he better win. You know, I remember being on, I guess it was a Stingray show early this year, me and Brad Logan, and way back in February, we were previewing the SEC, how things are going to break out. And, you know, they thought they were going to be pretty good. And I think we all knew better. I said there may be a coaching change in Mississippi, but it won't be in Starkville. And, of course, Ole Miss, again, finishes 12th in the league and does not advance. So we get to this day two. Of course, LSU just absolutely annihilates Kentucky. Kentucky, obviously, with different motivations in this tournament. They win a game, you know. But the reality of it is Kentucky's resume is pretty much set. LSU, of course, big RPI win for them, and we felt like, hey, our best friend in this tournament is LSU because they're on the opposite side of the bracket. We own two wins against them, and maybe they can help us in the RPI situation. Didn't work out the way we'd hoped. Arkansas, South Carolina takes care of them 6-5. I didn't expect that. And I'll tell you this, though. This Arkansas team, that's a very vulnerable host. Very vulnerable host. And just kind of talking to some of the Arkansas people, there's a lot of concern about this team. You know, they're hoping to get out of a regional. Beginning of this year, we were talking about Arkansas potentially winning the national championship. I don't think they've got a club to do it, and I think most people who run college baseball agree with me. I'm sure Dave Van Horn will always find a way to find some magic and win some games they shouldn't. But if I'm Arkansas, I'm not going into this tournament feeling like, hey, we're got a really good chance here. We're just kind of hoping to advance now. But again, South Carolina takes care of them 6-5. Vanderbilt destroyed Tennessee 13-4, and we felt that was a good thing for us because we held two road wins over Vanderbilt. And Tennessee, of course, number one RPI team in the country right now. But it didn't help us. I mean, it looks good on paper. But again, I think it shows some flaws in the RPI because it's supposed to be not only who you beat but who your opponents play, right? And so we didn't play Tennessee, but a team that we beat twice on the road, which makes that a quad one win when their RPI is in the top 60, takes down Tennessee, who had a worse non-conference strength of schedule than we did, for those of you out there that we'll get to that. Texas A&M, Mississippi State, a lot of people said, hey, if State beats A&M, it's absolutely done. Even the day of the game before we played, everybody's like, hey, if they beat A&M, you got to put them in as a regional host. Well, State beats Texas A&M. Again, Connor Hizak plays the hero yet again. And all of a sudden, we're feeling great about life. And I start thinking, you know what, if we can maybe win one more and then get to single elimination and get out of Hoover with a 3-1 record, I think you feel great. Yeah, and there's a lot of cautious optimism around Hoover on day three. Kentucky eliminates Arkansas 9-6. And again, I think it really shows the vulnerability of this Arkansas team. The pitching for Arkansas is an issue. So Arkansas, despite being the number two seed and winning the West, they go 2-Q. In Hoover. Tennessee bounces back to eliminate A&M, and of course, I've got questions about this A&M team. I really do. I think they're a really good regional team. I think they're going to have a tough time in a super. That should be at Bluebell Park, obviously, because they're the number two seed. I just think that offense is going to have issues in a big ballpark like Omaha. You saw that in Hoover. You score 7 runs in 2 games. I mean, that's not anything to sneeze at, but at no point did you ever think this A&M offense was about to explode. There was a lot of warning track shots hit that kind of spawned some pre-catch celebration from that dugout. I think, hey, that ball's supposed to be out of here, but it wasn't. And again, Tennessee eliminates them. So Texas A&M now, you're 2 seed from that side of the bracket. It's nuts, man. It's really nuts. 4 seed overall, but... Yeah, I think that's just a misprint, to be honest with you. They were the number 4 seed in the tournament. And they got beat. They got beat.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
All right, and then Kentucky takes care of South Carolina. South Carolina comes back and wins that game 6-5. And so, again, South Carolina, you look at this as a team. It's like, hey, these guys will be in the tournament, but they need to improve their standing just to be sure about it. And they show up in Hoover, and they play four games, and they win three of those. Pretty nuts. Pretty nuts. It really is. So you go down here, and again, I'm trying to keep up with all this, but LSU takes care of it. They finished 3-2. Pardon me, 3-2. LSU beats them 11-10, and of course Vanderbilt beats Mississippi State 4-3, and we nearly had some ninth inning heroics there again. And I've said all year long, Mississippi State is a team you got to fight for 27 outs, and sometimes you win, sometimes you don't. But the reality of this whole thing is that Mississippi State had opportunities in that ball game. We discussed that on Friday's show. We're not going to go back and break down the full games. I mean, those things are behind us now. We're looking ahead to the NCAA tournament. All right, South Carolina eliminates Kentucky 6-5 and advances to play LSU. And, of course, Tennessee beats Mississippi State 6-5. And that was a game, too, a game that we feel like we should have won. We get down in the ball game, 3-0, come back and tie it, and then Dakota Jordan – with a big, big, big base hit. Connor Heisek, of course, ties the game. Dave Mershon gets us on the board with a bases loaded walk. And the next thing you know, Heisek singles back up the middle. Tie ball game, and then State takes a 5-3 lead. Put up a big five spot there. And just felt like we could close this thing out. Unfortunately, Tyler Davis, who has been lights out for us, gives up a solo home run to Blake Burke, who is an amazing player. And you lose 6-5. Still had some chances. Then we get to Saturday, and it was a nuts game, this LSU-South Carolina game. And I remember talking to Jay Johnson, and we were in postgame, and he goes, you know, we were down 8-0 in this ball game. Does anybody even remember that? That's how it felt. There was so much that happened. And, of course, you had that controversial play, and it's basically called the Miami play for us in college baseball. Ron Frazier used to use this play a lot, you know, especially with two outs, because your infielders are playing big infield. So you're not holding the runner, right? You're really not even close. So they can get a bigger lead, especially when you have a left-handed pitcher. And so you can kind of sneak down the line. And when you got a left-handed hitter, it's a clear lane in there. And so what happens more times than not, when you break for home, and all of you high school and U-triple-A team, U-triple-S-A coaches, listen to me here, this is basically a free run more times than not. Because one of three things generally happens. When the runner breaks, the pitcher panics and he doesn't come set. And so then he just throws the ball home, it's a balk. That's usually what happens. Or they step off and then throw home, and in all the excitement, you steal the bag or they throw the ball away. And occasionally they get you out. But it's kind of a rarity, to be honest with you. And again, in a two-out situation, especially with a left-handed hitter and a left-handed pitcher, the situation sets up almost perfect. And Kingston said that, hey, we saw this earlier in the year and we felt like, hey, maybe we can get a call. They do. And there were actually two calls on the play. There was the interference, because the thing I couldn't figure out is why is Parker Nolan at first base? Well, it's because they called a CI. So, of course, the CI, the hitter is granted first base. The CI, of course, there was no swing. The catcher interference, we call it CI, the cool kids do. But the CI there gives you the ability to put the hitter on. And because of the fact... because of the CI, because he came out and got in front of the plate or on the plate. And again, that's a judgment call. The replays to me made it kind of sketchy. And I had somebody else tell me that technically in front of the plate is also to the third base side of the bag because you've got a runner. And so I haven't dug deep enough into it, but I know this. There were two fouls on the play. The catcher interference in turn makes that a situation where the catcher is now in obstruction. So two calls on the play. And Jay said when they called him out there, Derek Malika told him, Jay, you're not going to like it. I've never seen anything like it, though. Everybody's in a dugout. LSU's getting ready to hit. And then we get together and we put the runners back on the base and we get back to play in that same inning, resume the inning. And South Carolina is ahead 11-10. And as I tweeted out back then, you can't ever count out the Cajun voodoo. And, of course, they come back and win that thing 12-11. Tennessee beats Vanderbilt 6-4. Pretty entertaining game, but it never really felt like that Tennessee was in trouble. And then, of course, you get into yesterday's game, and Tennessee wins 4-3. And Tennessee was in charge most of that ball game. And the next thing you know, you look up, and LSU's made a game and nearly won the thing. Pretty crazy. But it was a great SEC tournament, and I feel like our Bulldogs acquitted themselves well. One more win would have been significant, I think. But we'll get into kind of State's resume here a little bit. As I told you guys before, I can make a case for and against Mississippi State fairly easy. But again, with so many teams ahead of us in the bracket, ahead of the RPI standings that couldn't host, you begin to look at this and think, okay, well, Mississippi State, by process of elimination, should be in great shape. And then ultimately, they end up taking a team to finish behind us in the RPI to host. And you can say, well, Steve, they won a power league. Well, the Pac-12 is no longer a power league. Ran those numbers also at jeanspage.com. I mean, the Pac-12 was terrible this year. They were the sixth highest-rated RPI team in the country. They were behind the Big Ten and the Sun Belt. They weren't a power conference. You say, well, you know, they won their league. Great. There are a lot of teams that won their league. That's a watered-down league. I mean, goodness, you see what Stanford did this year? I mean, last year we thought Stanford had a chance to win an AFL championship. They had a terrible year. And you got teams that are now leaving that conference for others. And so it's the last year of the Pac-12. And I think there was probably a bit of nostalgia and all that. I think that factored in with the committee. I really do. I think they, well, you know, it's last year of the Pac-12, which should mean nothing. I think it did, though. That's just my personal opinion. I don't know how you feel. That's how I feel. And again, we're going to break once we get into the bracket. I'm going to, again, top 10, we'll break down the bracket, and then we'll talk about, you know, my thoughts about, number one, how we proceed, and, you know, how I felt about Mississippi State's treatment in the bracket. But, hey, if you're angry, you have a right to be angry because you love Mississippi State baseball. But it's so interesting. There are a lot of people with a blame Mississippi State first mentality. But here's the thing. They say, we got nobody to blame but ourselves. Well, that's not true. That's not true. Now, ultimately, most of the blame does lie with us. It's true, right? You don't lose to Central Arkansas, right? You don't lose to them, ever. You don't blow the lead against Austin Peay when you're up considerably in that Wednesday game. You shouldn't lose to them in either game. But certainly when you've got a big lead like that, you got to find a way to finish the game. You don't go blow, you get walked off twice in the ninth at Florida. You get just one of those games, all of a sudden you got 18 SEC wins, right? You don't blow three leads at Ole Miss on Saturday. So, yes, there are some things we could have and should have done better. All of that understood, our resume is better than East Carolina. Our resume is better than Arizona. You're like, but Steve, you didn't win your league. We play in the Southeastern Conference, fellas. If we win our league, we're going to be the number one team in the tournament. That's how it plays out. It's true. And so both things can be true. Yes, we left some meat on the bone, and yes, we did not get favorable treatment by the selection committee. Both of those things are true. We don't have to pick a side. And it's interesting, though, there are some out there, and some of these same people that told you all offseason that we're going to be terrible making a coaching change, and now they're pissed that we didn't host? Are you kidding me? It's like we just want to be miserable. I choose not to be miserable. I'm going to enjoy college baseball. I've had a blast this year. I've had an absolute blast. I got to be there in person when Hunter Hines hit the big home run against Vanderbilt that ultimately won the series. I got to be there at Arkansas. We kind of beat those guys up a little bit in that Saturday game. I got to see Gerangelo Sanchez go out there and just absolutely shove. I've had a blast. I got to be there on Florida when we beat Florida 12-2. And again, in a series that we should have swept. I've traveled all over this conference and had a great time doing it. Not only is it my job, it's my passion. It's a lot of other people's jobs too, and they just don't do it. But I'm not going to be denied the joy of enjoying college baseball. I'm not. I'm not going to let other, we should have done this. You know what? Like, you know, maybe if you'd been at the ballpark, maybe your voice made a difference. I don't know. You know? And I say that as nicely as I can because I think it's important for people to understand that, you know, the people that love Mississippi State baseball, and there are some people that do and they express it in a different way. But here's the thing, like, it's amazing, like, when you have conversations with these people online. I started to mention some names today, but I really don't want to give them the joy of being mentioned on the show for their bad take. But somebody's like, well, the standard here is hosting. Is it? Maybe we have a different definition of what a standard is. You know, the hope is to host. We should host every year. I wish we did. But we don't. And we haven't. Yes, we have. No, we haven't. We have hosted 6 times in 25 years. 6. Do the math yourself. Go look it up. 6 times in 25 years. I mean, let it sink in for a second. And let's go back to pre-1999 when we had the 6-team regionals, and it was really about who had the bigger ballpark. You know, we hosted regionals in Starkville at times that we didn't even play in. Because of the fact we had a great venue, we knew what we were doing, they could make a bunch of money on us. It's more about merit these days. 6 regionals in 25 years. So talk to me about standards. It's time for us to elevate the standard. Because the standard for us has basically been hosting every once in a while and then being a number 2. That's been the standard. And you go back and think about, hey, in 19, how did 19 go for us? That was super cool, right? Right? We're top 8 national seed. That exceeded the standard. Ended up beating Stanford right here at Dirty Noble Field. They went to Omaha. 2021, we were top 8 national seed. We hosted a regional here and then beat Notre Dame in a super and we went to Omaha. We exceeded the standard because the standard for over 20 years now has really been for us not to host. We want to host and we feel like this year we deserve to host. But we're not going to sit here and browbeat our coaches and our players because you don't have a good definition of what the real standard is. It's like you romance these things that just don't exist. Guys, nobody loves Mississippi State baseball more than me. Many of you love it as much as me, but nobody loves it more than me. As I'm sitting here talking to you, I'm sitting here looking on my wall. I've got a glass cabinet up here that has a baseball card for every Mississippi State player that made the major leagues that they made a card for. I'm sitting here looking at Buddy Meyer right now. I got Willie Mitchell up here. I got Boo Ferris's rookie card. All right here. You know, it's a celebration of Mississippi State baseball. We have been one of the top 15 programs in the history of college baseball. There's really no question about that. I guess you could have some debate of where we rank in that top 15. But let's not get in a scenario where we take our personal standards and we confuse them with what's been the actual reality of things. It's true. It's true. And there are so many people, too, that had so low expectations of this team that I think every big win we had tasted like gravel in their mouth. And they kind of hate watch this team because they were like, I want to be right so bad. They wanted to be right more than they wanted Mississippi State to win. And I'm just going to tell you this. If I ever have to have Mississippi State lose in order for me to be right, that's a me problem and not a Mississippi State problem. All right, let's get to our top 10 list. Brought to you as always by closewithblair.com. That's C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R.com. Blair is my friend, your friend, our collective friend in the mortgage industry. Blair's been doing this, guys, for over 23 years. Top 1% close ratio in the country, back-to-back-to-back years. He will be your advocate with underwriting. And trust me, you're going to need one. Because not everybody just has this, you know, this perfect, unblemished credit report. Maybe you're not a conforming borrower. Maybe you're non-conforming. You need somebody that knows the ropes. Whether you're starting out in life for the first time, buying your first home, maybe you're buying a game day condo and you're wondering, hey, can we make this thing work with our debt-to-income ratio? Blair's a guy that can maybe move some things around for you and make that more affordable. Maybe the idea of the game day condo that you've always wanted is not as elusive as you might think. Reach out to Blair today at 601-500-2344. Again, 601-500-2344. And let him know, hey, Blair, here's what we're thinking. Can you help us? Chances are he can. We've had several Boneyard listeners that have closed loans with Blair. So maybe you're going through a life reset. Maybe you're looking at retirement. Again, just kind of starting out. Look no further with your mortgage needs than Blair Chandler at closewithblair.com. My friend, your friend. the front of the top 10. All right, I mentioned last week we were going to do a top 10 list of Russ Ballard. You say, Steve, I don't even know who Russ Ballard is. We didn't do any top 10s last week. We had too much going on, right? And so I had this on my list. I was like, okay, we'll get to this eventually. But Russ Ballard, guys, he is still alive and an English musician, born way back in 1945 in Hertfordshire, England. He has written some of your favorite songs, and you don't even know his name. In many of these songs, he performed them, and other people covered them later and had huge, huge hits. And so I spoke with the bride earlier, and I said, hey, top 10 list today is Russ Ballard. He goes, I don't even know who that is. I said, well, you may not know him, but you do know his music. And he has had tons of hits, and he has written even more for other people. I mentioned on our winning list, and that song's on our list again today. Today, when we're going to come back, we're going to celebrate the music of Russ Ballard. And so here we are. Number 10, a song in many respects, if you listen to it, I just listened to it in the car when I was coming back to the show. It sounds like it could have been recorded yesterday. It was actually recorded way back in 1982, and I'm thinking, surely this thing has been remastered, because sonically, it's at another level. It is our only song on our list that is sung by a female artist. And it's Frida, formerly of ABBA. I mean, just an angelic voice. Of course, they double and triple track those choruses for the harmonies. It's a great track that many of you know, and you had no clue who wrote it. But it's I Know There's Something Going On by Frida. And many of you are going to think, what's that song? Pull it up on your Apple Music or your Spotify. You'll be like, oh my gosh, I remember this. I even played it for Dana. I was like, you remember this? She goes, oh yeah, I know that. Yeah, Russ Ballard wrote that. Number 9, I think this is the debut for this band. It's Hot Chocolate. No, not Sexual Chocolate, goofball. It's Hot Chocolate. The British band Hot Chocolate, of course, they had the big hit with you sexy thing. You know, they also recorded a Russ Ballard song called So You Win Again. And it was a number one hit. Did you know that? It went to number one. It's written by Russ Ballard. Number 8, a little bit of a deeper track for this band, but it was also a big hit. It just hasn't maybe translated over the decades, but we're going with Three Dog Night. No, it's not Joy to the World. It's a great song called Liar. Also, Russ Ballard song. Number 8, Three Dog Night's Liar. Number 7, again, a song that we talked about last week. I don't know what's happening here. All these Facebook notifications in Spanish. Habla español muy poquito. But number 7, as we segue into Santana, it's Winning. And I absolutely love that song. And again, that's back-to-back list that we've had that song on there. Winning by Santana. That's a song that you should embrace. A lot of people know Black Magic Woman, things like that. Carlos Santana, an absolute genius. And again, you know, give those guys a lot of credit for the comeback. I mean, it's like, when you go back and you think about the fact that, you know, he was playing like at a Ramada Inn somewhere, next thing you know, he's recording with some of the greatest, you know, contemporary pop stars. And that, you know, The Game of Love with he and Michelle Branch was absolutely phenomenal. Most of you guys know Rob Thomas, of course, with Smooth. And it was great. Great. And then Santana, I remember that album, Supernatural. Nuts, man. But again, going back some years, Santana's Winning's number 7. Number 6, I had a couple of options here, but I elected to go with Sweet's version of New York Groove. And I'll explain why a couple spots down. But it's New York Groove. Back in a New York Groove. You know that song. I'm back in a New York Groove. It seems like everybody's covered this. But Sweet, a band that we hadn't talked a lot about out here that was huge in the 70s, had a hit with a Russ Ballard track, New York Groove. Number 5, and this band and Russ Ballard has a lot of connections. One of the greatest rock and roll bands of all time. And one with one of the biggest followings. And many of you went to churches where they burned their records back in the 80s, late 70s. We're talking Kiss. That's right. Just say it like I say it. Kiss. Yeah. You got to have a little edge to yourself. It's not like Prince's Kiss. It's Kiss. And it's God Gave Rock and Roll to You. It was originally recorded by Russ Ballard and his band Argent. And then, of course, Petra covered it. Yeah, the contemporary group Petra And again, there was a little back and forth with Kiss and Petra. They kind of came to some resolution on that. But God Gave Rock and Roll to You Too from the Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey soundtrack. If you haven't let your kids watch that movie, I think that I think you've done a disservice to those kids. Number four, and this is why we use Sweet's version of New York Groove. Didn't want to do a lot of duplication here, but Ace Frehley, the guy that really got me into rock music, he was my favorite member of Kiss when I was just a kid. I thought Space Ace was the greatest thing ever. I had a chance to see him over in Tupelo with Alice Cooper, got my Ace Frehley shirt on, and after Ace plays the guitar solo to shock me, he reached down and he hands me his guitar pick. It's true. And I've got an Ace Frehley, and he threw me his towel when the show was over. I got that here too. It's been washed. You know, I guess Sheldon Cooper would say I should have kept it so we could we'd have the DNA of Ace Frehley and we could clone Ace Frehley. But nevertheless, on the Frehley's Comet, the first album, they had a second album called Second Sighting. But the first album, the Frehley's Comet album, he recorded a great Russ Ballard song and had a hit with it called End of the Night. Everybody knows Rock Soldiers, right? Rock Soldiers, when Ace came back, the whole line, you know, is Ace is back, right? It was great. You know, the whole part about in DeLorean's automobile. Hey, Frehley Frehley, let's not be silly. There's life out there to kill or steal. Excuse me. I'm sorry, Ace. But it's End of the Night. It was a big hit. And the video is pretty cool, too. And it's basically a song that's kind of sympathetic about people that kind of lost their way. It's like the people that you encounter in a big city, you know, at night. People that are desperate out there just trying to find some measure of life. Whether they be streetwalkers or drug dealers or whatever, or homeless people or whatever, there's people out there. Not that we want to romanticize drug dealing by any stretch of the imagination. But there's a lot of people out there that are impoverished, a lot of people that are estranged from their families, and that's really what the song is about. Number three, and this is probably going to be a big surprise to many of you people, because this was a huge hit, and you probably thought America wrote it. They recorded it. They didn't write it. It's You Can Do Magic. A Russ Ballard classic that America had an amazing hit with. And of course, America had kind of fallen a little bit, I guess, and this was kind of a comeback track for them, written by Russ Ballard. All right, number two, Head East covered this, and I started to go with their version, but I really love Rainbow. You know, I'm a Ronnie James Dio guy. Listening to Dio yesterday on the way back from Hoover. I love Ronnie James Dio. I need to order that shirt. Matter of fact, if you see me soon and I've got on a Dio t-shirt, you'll know it's because right now, I needed to get that done. But Rainbow, of course, Ronnie, of course, was in Dio, and of course he was in Black Sabbath. They changed the name to Heaven and Hell, and that was Ronnie's idea. He's like, hey, Ozzy's not with us. I don't want to misrepresent things. And so they changed the name of Black Sabbath to Heaven and Hell after the Heaven and Hell album. And there's a great cover of a Black Sabbath song that Ronnie sang on that I listen to regularly called I, sung by Ani Logan, the guy that my son's named after. But we went with Rainbow's version of Since You've Been Gone. Love Rainbow. We've talked about them on the show before. Rainbow, a great band that I think that has in many respects kind of fallen through the cracks a little bit over time, but the music still holds up, just nobody plays it anymore. But number one, and it was the biggest hit that Argent had with Russ Ballard singing as the lead vocalist, Russ Ballard and Argent's Hold Your Head Up. And on days like today, after we've had a little disappointment, it's important for us to remember that. Hold your head up high. Hold your head up. Absolutely, in every situation. My dad used to always tell me the only reason we're going to look down is in case we drop something, and that's the truth. Always hold your head up, keep moving forward, keep that chin up, have a stiff upper lip, as our friends from Britain like to say, in honor of Russ Ballard, right? But there we go. That's your top 10 Russ Ballard list, and I guarantee you many of you guys that are from my generation, you'd be like, I know every one of these songs. I just didn't always know who sang them and certainly didn't know who wrote them. So that's your top 10 list for today. We'll be back with a new fresh top 10 list on Wednesday's show. If you have ideas for the top 10 list, reach out, let us know. We kind of got a little backlog right now, but if you give me a really good idea, I'll move you to the top of the list. We've had some kind of backup because I didn't do them last week, and we've had some that have kind of been sitting there for a while, and I don't want them to get stale. So we're going to try to knock out some of your list. But again, if you have an idea, hit up Roy Samonte, who is my friend. You can find Roy on Twitter and Spotify under the same handle. It's Dogmatic67. It's DAWGMATIC67. I would encourage you to follow him on Twitter and Spotify. He's not going to be spamming your feed. He rarely tweets anyway. And when he does, it's usually our list. It's not like pictures of his food or, you know, like his dog and, you know, in certain landscapes or whatever, you know, like his dog doesn't have a Twitter account and that kind of stuff. It's really weird. But to each their own. To each their own. You know, your dog doesn't need a social media presence. I'm just going to say it for what it is. But nevertheless, Roy been a great friend to me, great friend to the show. And I remember when, you know, there was a time, you know, when after COVID, there was a lot of changes in the world. And of course, Roy was part of a downsizing. And there were so many people. Even if they didn't, I advocated for Roy on the show. I said, hey, here's what he can do. Here's his email address. I had so many of you that reached out to me and said, hey, man, has Roy found anything? I don't really have anything, but I'm just kind of concerned about him and his family. Says a lot about Mississippi State, folks. It really does. You know, because Roy, and maybe one day I'll let Roy sit in on the show one day and let him do a top 10. Like, we, you know, we did some of his favorite bands, and he makes a list, and I make the delivery. But maybe one day, when we're out somewhere at some tournament or something, I'll record the show and I'll let Roy sit in and you can hear Roy. We'll see. Don't get too excited, Roy. Don't get too excited. But anyway, Roy's a big part of our show and I'm very appreciative of all the things that he does for us. And every time I see him, he's always so happy to see me, man. Roy's just a great guy. And I'm sure if we advance in this tournament, I'm going to see him somewhere on the road. So you never know. I may just meet up with Roy and let him do a top 10 list for you guys, too. And then he can kind of thank you guys for all your support, too. There's been so many people that have been out and said that they meet him and like, hey, you're the top 10 guy from the Boneyard, which is kind of interesting. It's true. But again, thanks as always for your support of the top 10 list. We'll be right back. We'll break down a bracket. All right, your bracket reveal brought to you by Campus Bookmart. Starkville's best place to shop when it comes to Mississippi State merchandise. We always encourage you to support a Starkville business whenever you can because of the fact that you love Starkville. You want to keep Starkville great. You want to keep yourself looking great. So if you're looking for gifts of the Mississippi State variety, whether it be clothing, household items, things for your pet, your RV, you can find them at Campus Bookmart. If you can't make it to town to see their smiling faces, we encourage you to visit them on the World Wide Web, courtesy of Al Gore's internet. It's true. At campusbookmart.net. And by being a loyal Boneyard listener of the show, we'll give you a promo code. It's BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Roberts. And that's easy to remember. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than $75, absolutely incomplete. And you best believe Kathy Brown will have your NCAA tournament shirts available pretty much immediately. So go ahead and get ready for that. Even if you can't make the trip or you're planning to make the trip, shop Campus Bookmart first for your NCAA tournament merchandise. So there we go. All right. I think we got a good draw. Some of you may disagree. And guys, they could have given us Pearl River Community College and Buck Tussle Tech, and some of our fans would have disagreed. But, you know, let's talk about our bracket first. We'll talk about the full bracket. Do I believe we deserve to host? Yes, I do. I do believe that. But that's behind us now, right? I don't think ECU deserve to host, but they are. And the reality of it is there's nothing we can do to change that. And so now we focus on what's in front of us. And that's what I'm going to encourage everybody to do. No matter how you felt about this team or about Chris Simonis or anything of the sort at the beginning of this year, this is where we are. We're getting ready to play regional baseball in Charlottesville, Virginia. I've already booked my room. We're ready to go. Got a tip earlier today that we were heading east, which was a relief to me because here was my fear, is that we would get stuck going to Arizona or something and be paired up with UCSB, even though I don't think UCSB survives that regional, or Oregon State, and it would be very difficult on our fans to make back-to-back West Coast trips in 2 weeks. It'd be tough on your good friend and host. But you understand my concern. I said, you know what? They're going to find a way to screw us. And I hate that I felt that way. But the reality of it is, I think that we have a good draw. And I think we have a chance to go win a regional. I think that our friends at Virginia, who last time we went up there, we won. You may recall, we went up there and won, and I think that it's going to be one of those things. I suspect Virginia people are not happy. I suspect they're not happy that that we are going to show up here. So we're going to talk our bracket first, and then we'll talk about the rest of the field and how the SEC teams fared. Of course, all 11 SEC teams do make the field. But I love the fact that we're paired up with Arkansas, too. So we win this regional, and Arkansas wins. We go up to see a very vulnerable Arkansas team. I think Arkansas really got a tough draw. Louisiana Tech goes in there as a 2. Kansas State is a 3. And SEMO is a 4. Certainly, you don't start Hagan Smith against SEMO. You save him for game number 2. But I could see Arkansas losing this regional. And again, we went up there and played those guys without Nate Dohm and without Connor Hyzak and still should have won the regional. And I said then, I won't be mad if we end up getting paired up with those guys again, because I think we can go in there and take that thing. And of course, if they lose and we're able to advance out of the Charlottesville regional, we would host a super regional right here in Starkville at Duty Noble Field. All right, so let's take a look. Of course, Virginia is the 1. We are the 2, paired up with St. John. Penn is the 4. I think that is a peach of a draw for us. So let's take a quick look, and we'll get more in depth later in the week. But let's take a quick look at St. John baseball. How about that? You know, I don't know how you guys feel about that. But St. John baseball, the Red Storm, winners of the Big East tournament. And so I think when you begin to kind of break this thing down, you know, the quality of play up there is not the same here. Now, that said, St. John's got a couple pretty loud wins out there. They're 37-16-1 overall, finished 14-7 in their conference. Guys, they opened up the year and took a game from Florida. They went into Gainesville in the season opener and won 9-5. Now, the rest of the weekend was canceled due to weather. So we don't know how that would have gone, but they're able to get that dub. And then they travel to Houston for a 3-game series there, and they lose 2 of 3. And then they go and play in this, I guess it was kind of a Texas trip mainly. They go play Texas, a pretty average Texas team, and they get beat 15-4. And then they play a 3-game set at Sam Houston, and they take 2 of 3, the final game of that series, a 6-5 win in 10 innings. They knock off Iona, and then they get Hofstra in a 3-game series, and they take all 3 of those games. And those games, for the most part, were competitive. 2 of them went down to 1-run ball game. They get LIU 13-2 up there in Queens. And then Stony Brook, you know, guys that they used to swing it pretty well. They get them 9-8. They take down Ryder in a 3-game series. They sweep that series. Those games really not competitive for the most part. St. John's put up a ton of runs. The Jaspers of Manhattan, they get those guys 10-5 in a midweek game. Take down Wagner 8-2. Then Fordham 9-0. They go on to lose to Fordham 2-1. And then win the series with an 8-2 decision on Monday. They get a weekend series against Winthrop, and this is where the tie comes in. They play Winthrop in Queens, New York, obviously. They win 18-4, and then they tie 6-6 in 7 innings. The earlier game I missed, 6-0. So that it's a 2-0-1 weekend for them. Fairfield was supposed to play them. You know, Fairfield, of course, the RPI darling a few years ago that they ended up couldn't do it because of their facilities. They had to postpone that game. And then it's a 3-game set against Villanova. And St. John sweeps that series 13-7, 11-0, and 3-1. UConn, an NCAA tournament team, they travel to Storrs to play the Huskies, and they lose 2 out of 3. They do win the middle game 15-7. They take on Columbia, of course, of the Ivy League, and get them lose that game 11-9. And then it's Butler. And they win 2 out of 3. Pardon me. I'm doing all this on the fly. I didn't know we were going to be playing St. John's. They lose the Sunday game 8-4. Midweek game at Rutgers, they get shelled 15-0. And then Xavier comes in. It seems like all these teams are former basketball opponents of Mississippi State. They get 2 out of 3 from Xavier. They lose the Friday game 4-3 and then win 9-3 and then win 6-3. Iona goes in there on a Wednesday and they beat those guys 5-4. Then they have a home series against Creighton and they take all three. The Blue Jays, right? Fairley Dickinson goes in there and does fairly well. They win 3-1 at St. John's. Seton Hall, and again, it's so weird. It's like the early days of ESPN. St. John takes 2 of 3 from Seton Hall. They lose that first game and then close out the next two. They do play Fairfield eventually and then lose to those guys 5-4. They drop a game at Georgetown and then bounce back to win the middle game, but ultimately lose the series to the Hoyas. And then they get into the Big East Baseball Championship. They beat Georgetown 11-9. They take down Xavier 8-7. Come back and beat Georgetown again 4-2 to win the Big East Tournament. So that's your first round opponent. Of course, we'll play the winner of that UVA game against Penn. So again, I like the draw, but let's take a little bit closer look. While we're looking here, let's just kind of talk a little bit about looking inside the numbers here just a little bit. Assuming these guys, here we go, season statistics. So as a club, they're hitting .286, swinging it pretty well. I got three guys of the regulars hitting above .300. The straw that stirs the drink up there is Jimmy Keenan, hitting .341, 11 tanks, 55 RBI, and he is far and away the best hitter. This is a guy that doesn't run the base as much, but a guy that swings a pretty good bat there. We'll have to watch for him. Where's number 34? Looking a little bit deeper here. Blake Mayberry hits .337. He's only got one home run, 36 ribbies, 5 of 8 stolen bases. Garrett Scavelli hitting .330. Hitting .330, 5 tanks, 36 RBI. They do have a handful of guys that do run the bases here as a team. They have attempted 90 stolen bases and been successful 68% of the time. 68%, no, 68 out of 90%. I'm just kind of rolling here as fast as I can. Kind of getting up to speed on these guys. But I think an interesting statistic here, too, is Ben Beauchamp just kind of jumps out here. He's got 15 hit-by-pitches. And then Anthony Brienza also has a dozen hit-by-pitches. As a team, they've been hit by the pitch 80 times this year. Isn't that interesting? I mean, is Big East pitching that bad, or is this a strategic deal with St. John? Are they a team that just kind of crowds the plate? You know, we'll see. But they have hit 41 jacks, and, of course, 11 of those come from Keenan. So not a lot of power in this lineup. They are a team, you know, not a ton of extra base hits, but they're really more of a doubles team than they are a home run team. 115 doubles, that'll kind of jump off the page at you a little bit. But, so a team that pretty much keeps the ball in the yard. And compared to what we have faced here in recent weeks, that's probably a good thing. Real quick here, we'll look over at the pitching side of things. And, again, on Wednesday's show, we'll get a little more in-depth as we get ready to head. I guess maybe we'll record that show in Virginia, the Friday show. We'll do our preview, our official preview on Friday. But looking at pitching numbers here, as a staff, it's a 4.26 ERA. Their starters, their frontline guys, have been Mario Pesca, Xavier Kahalser, and Evan Chaffee. Mario Pesca, 14 starts on the year. He is 6-1 and a 2.94 ERA. Not sure who we'll see, you know, because you know, everybody does a little bit different. But good thing is he is a right-hander. Right-handed sophomore. So, you know, I wouldn't be upset about that, you know, facing a right-hander. But, again, he's been pretty good for those guys. Looking at Kahalser here, Xavier Kahalser is another right-hander. Big strapping guy, 6'5", 175. I guess more lanky than strapping at 175 on a 6'5 frame. That's got some length to him. And then Evan Chaffee, look at him. Because they're going to throw a weekend guy, you can best believe. You know, nobody throws second line pitching in the first game of the tournament. It's a redshirt freshman. He is a lefty from Hamburg, New York. And so two right-handers on their weekend rotation, one left-hander. We'll see how it kind of shakes loose. But we won't know pitching plans till later in the week. But I suspect that we'll probably see Pesker call Holster. But they're going to go through and see and check matchups. And, you know, Chaffee's a guy that's only got a 3-0 record. And I say only 3-0 because he has 12 starts. So most of his decisions have been non-decisions. And Pesca, of course, leads the team with 70.1 innings pitched. I tell you what's interesting, too, is you look at the you know, the home runs against. They've allowed 49 home runs. They've allowed 49 home runs this year. And I don't know how Charlottesville plays, to be quite honest with you. We'll do a little research before we get together here. But, yeah, pretty. I think it's a good draw for us. And I think we got a good chance of winning. There are no easy regionals when you're number two. But looking at the fielding percentage here, too, as a team, 977. It's not bad. Not bad. But if you look at the quality of their competition, you know, outside of them playing Florida, they didn't really play anybody. And I say that with as much, you know, respect as I can muster. And a lot of people talk about, you know, you don't hear a lot of people talk about Big East baseball. A lot about West Coast baseball, obviously, you know, a lot here. I guess they play Texas. So, yeah, I mean, you go play Florida and Texas, I can kind of, you know, respect that. But when you get deeper into the year, there's not a lot on the schedule. It really jumps out. It says this team has been tested. And so, again, I certainly expect State to win this game. Kind of looking at the metrics here for St. John's, if we can find them, you know. So I'm just, you know, I'm excited we're going to Virginia. And what I mean by that, and that's no slight to Virginia, but I'm glad that we're in the East and we're paired up against a decent super. So you guys have a chance to make these games. I think that's very significant. We're going to need you to be there. And again, I've already booked my room. I'm excited and ready to go. We'll go get the oil changed and get ready to roll here sooner rather than later. But we're going to meet with Chris Lemonis here a little bit later. I told you guys on Twitter we were going to wait and do the show after meeting with Lemonis, but I've got something pretty special that's happening a little bit later. And so I've got to go pick up some personal papers that belong to a name you know, a guy by the name of Duty Noble. The family has found some documents that are pretty special. I consider it one of the greatest gifts that God's ever given me, that those records still exist, and we're going to be able to publish those for you in the book. So I got to go retrieve those and then bring them down to Jackson and get them scanned in, and then I got to bring them back because I don't want those to be out of family hands for very long at all. I want to be able to publish those things for you, and it's going to be something you've never seen before. And I've got a lot of work to do this week on the book in advance of making that trip to Charlottesville. And it's interesting, you know, how life works. I mean, it all kind of comes full circle. But I think there are a lot of people in the ACC that are not real happy about the SEC. You get what I'm saying? There's just a lot of people out there that I think that, you know, the SEC is given so much. I'm going to tell you, I think we earned that. All right, St. John's made a big jump over the weekend, 12 spots in the RPI by winning their conference tournament. But 37-16-1, they have a strength of schedule of 124. The RPI is 51. And you start digging a little deeper here into this thing. You know, it's as we get an ad to pop up. But 201 strength of schedule in the NOCON. But 5-4 against the Quad 1. 5-4 against the Quad 2, 9-4 against the Quad 3, and then 18-4-1 against the Quad 4. So they played 23 games against the Quad 4. And you begin to kind of piece this thing together here. You can kind of do the math yourself. 36 of their games this year were against teams in the Quad 3 or lower. And you say, but Steve, what does all that mean? Well, you know, the Quad 3, of course, you know, Quad 1, of course, is the top 25. And so, I mean, give them some credit for at least going and scheduling some of those games. But it wasn't a very challenging schedule. And I don't know if they've ever seen anybody quite like Cal Steven, you know. And, again, that's a loud win on game one with Florida. But, you know, at the time we thought, man, this is interesting, right? But not a great one. Not, you know, that's the thing. They played Florida. That was a 30 RPI, Texas 47. Sam Houston 78, but they played that game on the road, so they get a little bit of a bump there, I guess. Played those three games there. But again, a ton of these games that they played are against teams with RPIs of 240. UConn, that was a nice RPI thing for them, and they played that at home, and so that kind of, they played it on the road, so that kind of measures up with, because of the fact it's an RPI team in the top 60 on the road, that counts as a quad one. They won one of those games. And Xavier is the other. They played those games at Xavier. They were Big East games, but because of the fact they won them on the road, those are your five, right? Those are your five quad one wins. But kind of is what it is. I mean, Xavier, a pretty solid team in that respect. But before I get into the rest of the field, so let's talk a little bit about what Mississippi State should expect, right? Virginia's going to be a really good team. Assuming we win our first game, we certainly expect to face their ace. So we'll probably see St. John's ace, or who they feel is their best pitcher in game one, and we'll see Virginia's in game two. So how do we do it? Do we see, probably Cal in game one and then Durangelo in game two? And you figure it out from there. And the way Brix Auger has pitched, named to the SEC tournament team, probably see Brooks, I would suspect, or Pico in game three. But with Pico getting healthy and with Brooks kind of emerging here as of late, you'd like to think we've got the starting pitching to get there. We're going to have to find a way to close some games. Bullpen's got to be strong. Connor Hyzak, of course, named to the SEC All-Tournament team. Excited for him. He certainly earned it. I did some politicking before I left Hoover, to be honest with you. I did, to make sure that people just didn't forget. You know, we've been eliminated. Let's not forget the job that Mississippi State did. And I specifically mentioned to several media members that Brix Auger and Connor Hyzak were deserving, and I knew they knew that, but I didn't want them to forget their names as they began to consider their ballots. And so we do what we can. We do. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by Stark Vegas Clubhouse, if I can get it out here. Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Google Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Their Facebook page will come up, and you'll be able to just kind of peruse the amenities that are available to you at the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. And a big back porch area. That's one of the selling points. They didn't tell me that, but when I went there, I was like, what a cool place. It's so big and spacious. You can get a lot of people out here. I guess you can get a little rambunctious if you needed to, but not too much. You got neighbors out there. Just got a couple. But it's quiet, just 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. A lot of people have already taken advantage of our special and have already begun to book football weekends. But maybe that's not your thing. Maybe you're just thinking this summer, man, I'd love to be able to have a place to get everybody together, whether it be a friends group, your family group, a work group for a retreat or whatever. They can accommodate you there. 5 bedrooms, 2 baths, and again, that great fire pit area out back. You love coming to Starkville, and sometimes you think, man, I'd love to come to Starkville when it's not a ball game weekend, just so we can just kind of chill and relax and be together, watch some Netflix, order some pizza. You got that full-service kitchen. You can cook. You can buy some adult beverages. Got the wet bar there. It is absolutely the best place to bring a large group to the Golden Triangle area. Now, when you Google, some booking options are going to pop up, right? You're going to have the option to go through Airbnb. You're going to have the opportunity to go through VRBO. But if you book through the Evolve website, I can save you a little money. That's going to be BSR10, saves you 10% off of your stay at the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. The absolute best place to stay in the Golden Triangle for a large group. Okay. All right. I got a lot of tabs open, as you can imagine. But quickly, let's go through the bracket here, and then I'm going to go meet with Chris Lamonas. And as you're well aware by now, Tennessee, the number one seed in the tournament. Tennessee gets Southern Miss as a 2. I think the Golden Eagles have a little bit of a gripe here, to be honest with you. I do, especially since Tennessee and Southern played in a super. Indiana in as a 3. That's interesting. They were a bubble team. And Northern Kentucky, an automatic qualifier. So it'll be Tennessee versus Northern Kentucky, Southern Miss versus Indiana. So the winner will play Tennessee. I don't see any chance at all. East Carolina, of course, they weaseled their way into a hosting opportunity because of the fact John Gilbert, their AD, is on the committee. I got a lot to say about that. Maybe we'll talk about that more on Wednesday. They get Wake Forest as a 2. I think that's tough. I think Wake Forest is going to win this regional. They get VCU as a 3. And then East Carolina gets Evansville, our friends, the Purple Aces, of who we took 3 games from. I would love that. I would absolutely love to see East Carolina go 2-Q. If Evansville, guys, I'm pulling for you. I am. I'm absolutely pulling for them. And I think if East Carolina throws off here, they have the opportunity to get beat. They really do. And again, they manipulated the process, and I don't care what anybody else says. That's what I believe, and you can't convince me otherwise. Oklahoma, I think this is a very spicy regional. They get Duke as at number two, and Duke was expected to host until the last 2 or 3 weeks. And then you get UConn, one of the best teams from the East, and then Oral Roberts is an automatic qualifier. Guys, Oral Roberts has wrecked many a bracket over the years. I think this could be one of the most entertaining regionals. Florida State, a top eight, they get Alabama as a two. That Alabama offense capable of going there and making this thing of interest. They get a little bit of pitching. It could be interesting. They get UCF as the three, and then the Stetson Hatters as a four. And, guys, Stetson is no joke. You look at them and say it's a one versus four thing. Guys, the Hatters are tough. I won't be surprised at all to look up to see the scores and think, Stetson's leading Florida State midway through this ball game. I won't be surprised at all if that happens. I do think ultimately Florida State will win this regional, but I think they are a very vulnerable eight seed, and I think that Alabama, I won't be shocked if Alabama wins, but I do expect Florida State. Another spicy regional is in Fayetteville. Arkansas gets Louisiana Tech as a two. Tech won the regular season CUSA championship and then lost in the tournament to Dallas Baptist. Kansas State, a pretty solid. I would hate to say mid-major because they're not. They're in a power conference. But they're a team that's capable of making this thing interesting. And then, of course, SEMO. But Arkansas is a very vulnerable team. I think they got a pretty good draw. But don't be surprised if you look up and Arkansas takes a loss in this regional. And with their pitching woes, that's what you begin to worry about. Is there a team in that regional capable of pushing them to a deciding regional final? It's got enough offense. Could be interesting. And again, I think Arkansas will advance, but I think it's going to be a wild ride. We've already mentioned our regional. Certainly, I'm going to pick Mississippi State to win that region, though I do think the Hoos of Virginia will make it very, very interesting. All right, the Arizona regional, and I kind of feared last night we may get stuck sitting out there. Arizona gets Dallas Baptist as a two, West Virginia as a three, and Grand Canyon as a four. Now, Grand Canyon, of course, is kind of an also-ran, it's true. But DBU has pitching, and Arizona is a team that at times has been rather up and down. They do win the Pac-12 for whatever that's worth, the sixth best conference in all of college baseball. I do think that'll be a competitive regional, but I think Arizona should advance. You know, we'll update things when we get it later in the week. North Carolina, I think North Carolina probably feels like that they got absolutely screwed. And maybe they did. You know, maybe John Gilbert worked some magic here and got LSU sent there. LSU is a two versus Wofford. And so you got to think LSU ought to be able to throw off in this ball game and save Luke Holman and jump for the rest of this regional, which is bad news for North Carolina. LIU in is the four. So UNC will obviously throw off, and then I suspect they'll see Luke Holman in game two, or maybe jump. I like LSU to win this thing. I'm going to pick the Tigers to win that regional and then advance to a super at Arizona. And then all of a sudden you start thinking, Steve, is LSU going back to Omaha? Well, I wouldn't bet against it. All right, Kentucky, the number two overall seed in the tournament, they get Indiana State. Indiana State gets absolutely screwed in this deal, and again, I put a lot of this on John Gilbert. You know, if we wanted two mid-majors, we could have gotten UCSB and Indiana State. They were both more deserving than ECU, but because of some, quote, I guess, nepotism on the committee. Indiana State, not only do they host, as Aaron Fitz so succinctly pointed out, they get sent to the number two overall national seed. That's a joke. And it's, again, it's about geography. They'll get Illinois as a three, and in Western Michigan is the four. I like Kentucky to win this thing. I felt like Kentucky would probably be paired with Indiana State, and Kentucky have a pretty clear path. But Kentucky will play every game at home should they advance. Oregon State will host out in Corvallis. They get UC Irvine. They were a team that some people thought could play their way into a hosting opportunity. They did not. And then you get Nichols, who is a really solid number three. Really solid number three. And then Tulane is a four that gets in as an automatic qualifier by winning the AAC Conference Tournament, the tournament that ECU thought they could check, you know. So So that'll be an interesting one for sure. I like Oregon State to win this one, playing at home. I won't be surprised if somebody upsets them, and maybe Irvine's probably the best, but you'd have the Beavers going to Kentucky. I think Kentucky's going to get to Omaha this year. They're the only team in the Southeastern Conference that hasn't done it. NC State, they didn't get an easy one either. And I thought we may end up in Raleigh. I was already kind of looking at things last night. My wife finally said, stop stressing yourself out, trying to figure out where we're going. Just wait and find out. I'm already checking hotels and flights and things like that, just kind of seeing what's drivable and what's not. NC State gets South Carolina as a 2. And after the way they played in Hoover, I don't think they're happy about that. James Madison is a team, obviously, that beat Arkansas this year in Fayetteville. And then Bryant, the Bulldogs, will be a 4. I like NC State to advance, but I think South Carolina is going to make this thing awfully interesting. Now, this Georgia regional, I think, is a joke. I'm just going to lay it out there. You know, I think Georgia playing at home against anybody favors the Bulldogs. I mean, it wouldn't anybody, but that launching pad they have down there. They get UNC Wilmington as a 2. UNC Wilmington, I don't think, deserves to be a 2, but I'm on the committee. They get Georgia Tech as a 3. I think that's a very lazy pick. And again, I think geography played a factor in some of these things. I think it's pretty obvious. Army is the 4. I like Georgia to advance. And, of course, they would be paired up with NC State. So you'd have NC State or South Carolina headed down to Athens. I don't think Georgia can win at Omaha, but I think they've got a really good path to get there. Clemson, and I like this regional here. I really do. I think this is kind of a sexy regional that not a lot of people are going to talk about. Vanderbilt has played really well as of late. They're going in there as a 2. They get Coastal as a 3. Very, very solid mid-major program. And those guys are gritty. I won't be surprised to see that Coastal has beaten either Clemson or Vanderbilt when it's all said and done. High Point, of course, beat Ole Miss this year, but so did everybody else. They're the 4. But I like Clemson here. That said, don't be surprised if Vanderbilt takes them all the way to a winner-take-all regional final. Oklahoma State, it's a pretty loaded regional, to be honest with you. Oklahoma State gets Nebraska, who won their first ever Big Ten championship. And that's not saying a lot, but still, they're the conference champs. And then Florida, a team that has played pretty well down the stretch, and then all of a sudden they blow it in Hoover. They're the number 3 seed there, and 2 and 3 is basically the same. You play the same game. And then Niagara's the 4. You know, the Cowboys are really good. And I don't know that Oklahoma State gets enough respect nationally for the program they have been historically. I won't be surprised if Florida makes this thing interesting, but I think the Cowboys should have an opportunity to win this thing. But if you look up on day 2, if Florida's 2-0, don't be shocked. All right, UCSB, they're going to host San Diego as the number 2. Oregon is a 3, and Fresno State is the 4. UCSB has been red hot. They have not lost a game in the month of May. I think that ends in this regional. I really, really do. I like San Diego a lot here. And, of course, the parks there are not intimidating at all. Oregon was a team early on that people thought may make some noise. They really haven't. Fresno State is another team, too, that out in the West that has been kind of that gritty. They're kind of the East Carolina, but they have a better record, you know, in the College World Series because they've actually been there. Won a national championship. So that could be another spicy one too. So like because of the fact those games are played so late at night, when you watch all your SEC stuff and you're not done with college baseball, let me encourage you, turn that one on. Texas A&M would be paired up with UCSB. I think this is an absolutely super fun regional. I think this is great. Texas A&M gets Louisiana Lafayette as a 2 and then Texas as a 3. You think Texas is jacked to go to College Station? They have a ton of fans there. They should. And then Grambling comes in as a 4. So A&M will, you know, they'll throw a midweek pitcher, which is what they should against Grambling, and they should be able to win that ball game. And then Louisiana and Texas. I don't think A&M got a peach of a draw. Of course, they have arguably the easiest game of the first opening games. But you get Texas? Yeah. That's tough. And listen, the Raging Cajuns are tough too. Don't be surprised if UL beats Texas. There's a reason they're the 2 seed. UL wasn't really a threat to host, but they're a very, very solid team comprised of Southern baseball players that maybe weren't quite good enough to play at LSU or in the Southeastern Conference, but they've gone there and they've done a great job there. And so I think it's a very, 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 very sexy regional. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. All right, I got to get out of here. And so let me remind you, if you hadn't done so, go to whenthebottomfalls.com. You can get that book and all of my sports books there. And listen, pre-orders for The Dude are coming soon. And again, I got some big things to pick up today. It's going to be a busy day for your good friend and host, a busy week. I got a ton to do. It'll be some late nights before I leave for Charlottesville on Thursday. But I'm excited to do it for you guys. Come join us over at Gene's Page. Nobody's going to give you better coverage of the regional than we are. Again, when the Bulldogs are on the road, so are we. And so we'll be up there. We'll cover that. And we're excited about that opportunity. But until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies and people can see a difference in the way we live.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.